with me here. KG4WXW. David. Good. Hello, David.
Good evening.
You hear that guy playing the piano there?
Good stuff.
Okay, now that's B. Bumble and the Stingers is who that is. And the guy playing the piano is not the guy that was supposed to be on that session. See? And I hired the guy that's doing this, which is phenomenal. But at the end, he does a sweep across the piano keys and breaks his finger. What do you think about that?
I didn't know that.
I didn't either, but I read it, on the interwebs is where I got it, see?
On the internets.
But that's what he did, so I don't know. That's kind of cool. Well, we are live tonight, and I purposely will let this thing play through just a little bit so you can hear the guy. What's that boogie-woogie look that he's doing on the left hand of that piano? Anyhow, tonight our guest is Richard Lenoir, KI5DX. And what a character this guy is. We're just so happy to have him on the air because he started this Paris, Texas ham fest. Hey, now here we go. Here we go. Listen to this thing at the end here. Somehow, in the middle of all that, he wound up with a broken finger. Anyways, he started the Paris, Texas Hamfest. He's also the owner and operator and creator of the Maine Trading Company. And I guess I want to say they're a phenomenal company selling amateur radio equipment, gear, and toys and everything. Hello, Richard. Jumped off. Let's do it again. Hello, Richard.
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Yeah, I think I got fat fingers.
Hello.
I think I got
Ted
fat
and David.
Fat fingers on this little console here. You know, this is
okay.
One of these newer digital things. You know, and I like the big ones, the big consoles that have the big round wire wound. You know, the Davin step attenuators and things like that. Of course, you probably don't know what that is because you aren't old enough. Anyhow, well, welcome aboard, and how are things going in Paris, Texas?
Hey, Ted, it's a little cool here tonight. I think it's going to get down to, you know, maybe in the 50s or so, but we're ramping up for a big holiday selling season at the store.
Well, I know, you know, the first time I ever corresponded with you or met you, you had sent me an email that said there was a big ham fest. You were starting a ham fest. And it was, and I don't know if that was the first one or if you'd already started it and this was like the same. I know that the Paris, Texas, that ham fest was in its infancy. And either that or it was the first one. I can't remember. So we got on the air and promoted it. And I was real impressed because, I mean, you were really, you know, you were really knocking it out of the ballpark putting this thing together. So now, from what I understand, and we wanted to come to it this year, but we just weren't able to. But it sounds to me like it's the ham fest to attend if you're a Texan or you live anywhere near that area. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it? Tell us how you got the idea to start this thing. I mean, how do you do that too? How do you just start a ham fest from scratch? You know, I mean. That just seems like, a daunting thought even.
Yeah, my advice to anybody wanting to do that would be don't do it. I'm a ham, KI5DX. I live here in Paris, Texas, and small town, 25,000 people or so, and, you know, I've always gone to Hamfest ever since I've been licensed and even way before that. And, you know, I worked and had a family here. Everything was clicking along and we decided to do the Hamfest. And I think we did about 8 of them. Now,
I know this was a while ago when we first corresponded.
Yeah. Yeah. We did several Hamfests and they were good. We would usually draw, I would always anticipate and hope for thousands of attendees or whatever, like Hamcom or Dayton or Orlando, but we never got that. It was, you know, 200, 250 was probably about it.
Well, you have to have the right kind of hot dogs, and you also have to serve funnel cakes. That's what gets hams come out for funnel cakes, okay?
Hey, we tried funnel cakes and hot dogs and barbecue and mud wrestling. We've tried it all, and, you know, but it was always a success. No matter what, you know, however many turned out, it was always a success. But, you know, things changed with me personally, and I ended up losing my job in 2009, and I ended up starting a ham radio store. So and there was pure coincidence and accident and everything else. And, you know, the Paris, Texas Ham Fest, it kind of carried over. We did maybe one or two more ham fests, actual ham fests at the fairgrounds here, after the business started. But then we just made it our customer day at the store.
It was a while.
And, now it's we have lots of folks show up for it now. It's a big deal.
Well, you know what's interesting, and I'm gonna you know, kind of tell some tales here. I may make you a little uncomfortable. I don't know, but what I realize about the main trading company. We'll try to get into this here in a minute, and you can tell how you actually wound up getting started in this. But here's the deal. You know, I've been in ham radio since a long time, all right? I'm not even going to get into how long. I just, you know, all I can tell you, my first equipment was all tubes. You know, I didn't have anything with a transistor in it or a NuVista or anything. You know, it was all tubes. And, you know, I've dealt with a lot of amateur radio stores over the years. I really have. I mean, and the thing that has struck me more than anything is the pick up the phone. Because they're always a distance away. You never have a ham radio store in your hometown, you know. So you pick up the phone and you call and you say, "Hey, tell me about this right here. You know, I'm thinking about getting one, but I've read the description and I've done all that. But what about this or what about that? Will it do A, B, or C, or how does it work? You know?" And you get some guy on the phone that says, "Here's the deal. Ring, ring, ring. It's like, hello, Amherst Radio, whatever I am. Okay, I'm interested in what you call it here, and I'd like to know about the items 1, 2, and 3. Oh, well, the guy that does that, he's not in today. I'll have to have him call you back, you know. I mean, it's always something, you know. It's like, you know, I don't know how to describe it. And then there's this unconcerned attitude, you know, that you have. And I'm not saying everybody's like that. Don't get me wrong. You know, I'm not saying that, but I think it's so important that an amateur radio store be owned by radio amateurs, people who are actually active and in the fraternity of ham radio. And there's some places that that's just not the case. You know, these people bought the store, inherited the store or whatever, and they just don't have the same kind of focus and drive. But what I'm saying is it makes me feel good to know that I know beyond a shadow of a doubt I can pick up the phone and call the main trading company and ask a question about a piece of equipment. And, yeah, you might not know the exact answer that I'm asking, but at least I can feel, you know, camaraderie on the other end of the telephone. I can feel somebody there that's saying, "Hey, you know what, maybe I don't know this, but I'll find out." You know, but it isn't that that gloomy, "Oh, my God, you ask a question, and I'm going to have to figure this out." It's none of that kind of thing going on. And the other thing is that when you get on the phone, you're talking to somebody, or even if you order online, there are folks making it happen. You know, not folks, you know, letting it happen. They make it happen. So you get whatever you've ordered, you get it. It's right. The order is correct. They're paying attention, you know, that sort of thing. One Christmas, this is no joke, I ordered some radios. Actually, I can say the kind of radios they were. They were ICOM, amateur radio transceivers, and I had to, and the tracking was not supplied. Everything was just, you know, and it's Christmas time. Who the heck wants to go into opening gifts and all the gifts you planned on giving are not there because some doofus, you know, spilled his coffee on the paperwork or just doesn't care. Smoked two or three joints maybe before, you know, I mean, who wants that? Nobody does. So I had to call this company back and I made them ship three more transceivers. Now, granted, they all got here. I had six ICOM radios delivered. I shipped three back. But I told the guy, look, accountability, all right? I'm a customer. I just want the stuff here for Christmas. I don't want to discuss anything else, you know? And that's why I think when folks get ready to order, and I'm excuse my soapbox because I've been through this too many times, you know, when folks get ready to order, they need to think about who they are ordering from and what kind of business is it? How much do they know about them? Because if it's critical, if it's a birthday or a Christmas present or anything, or even just because your impatient little kid wants his radio right away, you know, you need to know these things because that's what puts your mind at ease and that's how you know that you're getting, you know, you're getting a deal. Sometimes, you know, a 99-cent discount is not exactly worth anything. You know, if the radio doesn't get to you or the accessories or something like that. Anyways, that's my soapbox. That's why I like you, Richard, and that's why I like your company, the Main Trading Company. That's just honest, you know, not blowing smoke or anything like that. I have some hot buttons, and ham radio stores are one of them. And yours is a people business, and I really admire that. And you know, eternally hope that you guys are successful and do really, really well. And anyways, now I'm off my soapbox. What do you want to talk about, fishing or?
Oh man, let's talk about ham radio and ham radio stores. I love that stuff, man. I love this ham radio business, Ted. It is awesome. I did not intend to go here with it. That's the thing. I'd lost my job in 2009, I guess it was, February. And man, I didn't know what to do. And the economy was bad. And I live in a small town and my background is sales. And I didn't know what to do. So just to kind of hold me over till something got going, I started buying some surplus electronics and I would put it on eBay and sell that stuff. And I told my wife, I mean, we were doing good. They would leave, my wife and kids, they would leave and go to work, and my living room and the carport and everything turned into, you know, e-business central or something. And we were doing good. And I mean, we're paying the bills anyway. And I told her, I said, look, let's go rent a storefront. And, you know, instead of putting it all online, let's put it out in the store and maybe it'll sell there before we have to put it online. And so that's what we did. We rented a tiny place and we were scared to death. It was $250 a month. And we kind of shared it with another party or whatever. But I was afraid, and it was so tiny, but I was afraid we couldn't fill it up. Well, in just a short period, I mean, it was full and we had stuff stacked from the ceiling. It was mainly Radio Shack surplus. I was buying lots of that. And being a ham, of course, I had some ham gear in there. And it wasn't long. I'd sent an email or a phone call or something to Alinco and they picked us up. And we started selling new Alinco and we were doing real good with it. And then, Jetstream came along and, MFJ came along later and we moved and got a bigger place and things just happened. Where we really got our break was Kenwood. Kenwood brought us on and it didn't happen overnight. And, you know, we started selling new Kenwood and then I would almost say the rest is history. ICOM came right behind that. And then Yaesu a couple of years later. And, I'm not one to brag and I'm not bragging. I'm very grateful, but we're number three or number four in the nation every month and have been ever since. And we do a lot of ham fests, 28 of them a year. And man, it has really been something to watch this thing grow and take off. And we shouldn't have made it. There's no way that you know, I don't think if I started it today that it could happen the way it did.
Well, you know, sometimes you know, it's really weird in our lives, and I don't want to get all preachy on you, but somehow in our lives, sometimes God has a plan for us, you know, and it's so foreign to us. If somebody were to walk up and say, "Hey, this is what you're going to be doing 5 years from now," you know, you'd probably be rolling in the floor. You know, you just stop. Come on, give it. And then all of a sudden, it happens, and it's almost like it takes on a life of its own. Is where it is. If you're in the flow, you can fight that flow, I think. And if you do, I don't think the outcome's very good. But you stay in the flow, I think. You know, and that's not to say that if that is the case, that you're going to have an easy time of it. I don't believe that. I think we have to really put forth the effort to shine, you know, in whatever we're in. And but sometimes I believe that's the way it is, especially when I hear people say, "I never dreamed I'd get into this," you know. Oh, I love it when people say that.
Oh, exactly. And you brought it up, and I think it was all God's plan, because we if I would have planned this, I mean, I would have failed. There's no doubt about it. And I didn't plan this. I just wanted to sell some electronic junk on eBay until I could find a job. And here we go. And I mean, we're one of the biggest amateur dealers in the nation. And it's not really anything I've done. I just kind of suit up and show up and come in every day and answer emails and, you know, work on the website. And it's crazy to see what has happened. And
but you were like, when you first went into this, it was like, just, you know, you were buying things from places, who knows where, and then selling it on eBay. But you had to have, at that point, you had to have an aptitude, and you had to have knowledge of the electronic items that you were picking up and selling. You know, you had to know a little bit about that stuff in order to be successful with it. And, yeah, that's, you know, because, you know, it's really strange. I mean, I go through this stuff, and I point out little things to people. Like, for example, a long time ago, Olson Electronics, I don't know if you remember them, but they were, you know, a wholesale house, I guess. They had all kinds, they carried everything. I think they'd get lots of from different manufacturers, and then they'd have their name put on it. So if there was X number of pieces left over, they'd slap that Olson brand on there and sell it in their stores. And they used to sell this little microphone. It was two crystal elements, one elevated over the other one, so you talk kind of like between them. They were crystal, and they had a switch you could configure them, I think, either series or parallel or something. They sounded absolutely horrid, okay? But they looked a lot like an old DX77 RCA mic, but they were a lot smaller than that, tiny compared to a 77. But they were made to look like that, you know. They had, and they sold for $4.95. And I think every CB-er that I knew had one at one time or another. And so now I see them on eBay for $200.
Right.
Like, what human would pay that kind of money for that horrible microphone? But they, for some reason, the value has just gone through the roof on them. So those are the kind of things you got to know if you're going to participate successfully on eBay. And that's, hey, that, you know, hello?
I'm here.
Okay, I heard something. I didn't know what it was. Maybe earthquake. David, did you do something over there?
Don't be looking at me.
It was me. I moved my microphone.
Okay, well, that's what it sounded like. It sounded like a mic stand sliding across the room. But that's like sitting in a house on a sofa, and you hear a big metal door slam, and you don't have any metal doors in your house. You know,
sorry.
Anyhow, yeah, I think that kind of intrigues me, though. There was a friend of ours that started buying, what were those things? Those Star Wars laser things or something. You remember that, David?
The lightsabers?
Yeah. And I don't know, the guy bought all kinds of them up and then sold them on eBay and just about got rich doing it. But he happened to know that corner of the market. He knew that you know, they would bear this much, and he could get them for this much. So anyway, so that's cool. So let me ask you a question. How much ham gear did you do selling and swapping and whatnot over eBay or selling over eBay?
Well, you know, being a ham, of course, and I came into the hobby as a licensed operator in 92, but I've fooled with radio since I was a little kid, you know, shortwave radios, crystal radios, CB radios, even stringing wires and trees when I was way too young. My parents, you know, they put up with a lot of crap, I guess.
did you use the slingshot thing, or how did you get your wire up there?
No, man, no. You take a Craftsman 11/16 socket,
yes,
and you can and you can tie a string through that, and man, you could sail that right over the top of a tree. I can't do it now; my shoulder's all messed up. But
yeah, there's a couple of sockets hanging from my trees out here.
Right, and in the old home place where I grew up, there's still sockets hanging in the trees now, you know. But that's how I got started, just fooling with radios and electronics. I took electronic technology when I was 18 or 19 years old at a school in Waco, and I had a TV shop early on and worked on TVs and VCRs. And you know, my background is electronics, but I mean, I'm a salesman. That's what I really love.
Did you ever learn to take a remote control and actually program a VCR?
No. You know what I would do? I mean, I could, but I would hate to do that. I would take a piece of black electrical tape and put over the clock on the VCR so I wouldn't have to see it flash. You know, that's terrible, Ted.
You know, when you're pulling antennas up in trees, now this is something that David has done an abundance of, and as far as I know, him and Matt together, you know, they were always coming up with something evil in the way of an antenna, mm-hmm, or something. What kind of antennas were you putting up, and what were you connecting them to?
Well, as a kid now, I mean, I would just put up long wire antennas, and there was a CB-er that lived down the street. He was an old man back then. He knew this guy, Jack Poteet was his name. He was not a ham radio operator, never had a ham license, but this guy knew radio, and he was like magic. And he knew shortwave. He had old Hallicrafters S20Rs and S38s and SX120s, and wow. He was a CB-er. Oh, man. He was like the radio god to me when I was a little kid, like 8 or 9 years old. I would skip school to go to his house and watch him play radio. And I mean, man, he taught me so much. He even FM broadcast, he would put up antennas for that to listen to stations out of Dallas, and you know, which is 100 miles away. And That was a big deal back then. And, you know, I would sit in there and at night and listen to this old guy. He, you know, tune in the world. And he taught me how a Hallicrafter, remember they had the band spread. You would tune in on the main dial, and then you would get over on the band spread and kind of spread it out to where you could fine tune them in. He told me and, you know, showed me how all that worked. And
If you get the main dial on the right spot, then the band spread dial is calibrated so you can actually read it out.
Right, and, you know, right. And then, you know, he was a CB-er too, and, you know, a lot of people don't like that or whatever, but, you know, in the 70s and early 80s, that was a big deal, and I was a little kid. Well, he would take and make, the guy didn't have a lot of money really or anything. He made all his own antennas for CB, and he would take a dipole antenna. I remember it was 102 inches on each side of the center insulator, and man, he would talk all over the country and all over the world, and he never ran illegal power or anything like that. And he really scolded me on that you never, you know, want to run any more than the, you know, authorized power. And man, I was hooked. He showed me how to build crystal radios, and you know, I was working on and repairing radios by the time I was, you know, a teenager. So, you know, so that's what I did. So to answer your question, I'd put up the 11-meter dipoles and string long wire antennas up in the trees and out to the barn for my shortwave stuff when I was a little kid.
Well, you know, it's really funny. Some of these, they're the Elmer types that really want to help you and teach you. See, I was building, I found out that a Lafayette phono oscillator, which is an L-shaped chassis, that's all it is, with a couple tubes on it. And I found out that if I ran the antenna, well, first thing I found out was it had a hot chassis that made an announcement to me several times.
Right.
Okay, and yeah. But once I got past that, I found out if I ran a wire all the way to the back of the yard and then wrapped it around through a stick or whatever, wrapped it around the telephone lines in back, and they were, this looked like a big thick cable, but the outside of the cable looked like it was covered with some sort of a metal or a can type looking material. You know, it was pretty fat. I'd say probably 2-3 inches round. Probably had all kind of cables in it, you know, and that was what it was. So anyways, if you wrapped around that, then you could get on your bicycle, which I did with the transistor radio, and I could just drive all over the place, and I could hear this little transmitter. So I put a record changer on and a 45 to tell it to repeat, so it just kept repeating the same song, and I just kept riding. Well, I found out as long as I stayed near the phone lines, I could hear it. So I went a mile away, I mean a pretty good distance, and went into a friend's house, and I went into the backyard, and I was holding the radio around the phone lines, and it would start coming in. So we went inside, and we took an alligator clip, went to his phone dial, and then went to the back of the radio, where there was a little screw that said antenna, and connected it on. And man, it was like a 50,000-watt station. I mean, it was coming in like.
There are few geniuses in the world today, but one of them is Bob Greenberg, W2CYK. He invented R-Finder. What this is an app for your cell phone. And, of course, your cell phone knows where you are by means of GPS. When you go into a city or even your hometown and open up R-Finder, it tells you every repeater in your immediate area. It gives you the split. It gives you the PL tone. It tells you whether it's on Echolink, IRLP, or DMR. All of it's there, all the information you need on R-Finder. Go to rfinder.net. That's rfinder.net. If you've got a two-way radio in your car, you're a ham operator and a cell phone, you need R-Finder. rfinder.net.
The ICOM 7300. And now this is a contester's dream. It's a high-performance HF transceiver with a compact design. It doesn't miss a weak signal under any circumstances. And it's got the waterfall function and the real-time spectrum scope. Man, it's exactly what you need if you're a contester. ICOM has the reputation of being incredible in the performance and also the service they provide to you. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/amateur. That's ICOMAmerica.com/amateur.
You know, there are very few hobbies that can stick around for a century. But amateur radio is one of the growing survivors, with about 3 million currently active hams worldwide. Most of us know about the public service aspect of our hobby and how we can help neighbors by providing emergency communications. It works when nothing else does. But there's more to it than that. Hams are part of a worldwide community that spread goodwill with some of the nicest, smartest, and most interesting people that you'll ever meet. Of course, you know, it's easy to interest people in ham radio, but then there's that pesky test. And for many, that's a big stop sign. Those technical questions might as well be a foreign language to a newcomer. And frankly, a lot of the teaching tools aren't very good. But now, thankfully, there's a game changer. It's called Ham Test Online, and it turns the gobbledygook into something that's pretty easy to understand, and that makes getting licensed really easy. And not only is it inexpensive, but it comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. You get your ticket, or you get your money back. And in a recent independent study of new hams, 97% gave Ham Test Online 5 stars. So, if you've been putting off getting your license, no problem. Maybe you're a technician wanting to upgrade to general or extra. No problem. Try it right now. The first 50 questions are free. Your success is guaranteed. Try it out right now. www.hamtestonline.com. That's www.hamtestonline.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Is an online publication called The Spectrum Monitor. Have you ever heard of it? Well, if not, you need to go to their website, thespectrummonitor.com. That's thespectrummonitor.com. Each month, all kinds of pertinent articles pertaining to ham radio, shortwave, citizens band, scanning, Wi-Fi, you name it, it's in there. Color pictures, incredible writers writing these articles. You just have to check it out. You need to subscribe. Go to thespectrummonitor.com. Once again, the website is thespectrummonitor.com. Give it a look over and subscribe. thespectrummonitor.com.
This is Michael Coulter, Whiskey 8 Charlie India, WHCI, with the Dayton Hamvention. And I want to welcome all of you and invite all of you to come in May of 2019 to our Hamvention, which will be in just outside of Xenia, Ohio, X-E-N-I-A, Ohio. And it is the biggest celebration of amateur radio, shortwave listening, electronics of all sorts. It's a celebration of people who love that. And it is everything that you could possibly want there. So come on out. Join us. And if you have any questions, look at our website, hamvention.org.
Crazy. So, I later on, I got into building, and I built this little transmitter out of tubes, out of TV parts. You know, I used to pester the daylights out of the TV repair people for all their dead chassis, and it was horrifying my mother because I had stacks of them outside, you know. And, of course, you can't throw anything away. You've got to go through and scavenge all the parts out of them before you can throw them away. But anyways, there was a radio engineer. I got hooked up with him a little later, but his name was Ed Budabaugh. He's out of the Detroit area, but he actually lived in Canada. And at that time, I don't know what station he was working for. When I was at CKLW, he was there. He was the chief engineer there. Well, anyways, I was on the phone with him, and I said, I can't get these transmitters. I said, I'm building them, and they're 4 or 5 watts out. And I said, but the signal doesn't go anywhere. He said, well, you've got to match it to your antenna. He said, how long is your antenna? I told him. He said, well, why don't you get up on the dial about 1600? And that way your antenna doesn't have to be so long. Okay, so I did. He asked me how many feet it was. And he said, well, you need an inductor and a capacitor. And he told me the whole thing as to how many turns in. And I hooked that up, and wow, it was going everywhere, man. You know, that antenna was tuned to the frequency. Right. And I wound up getting in trouble. You know, I had a, you know, the fellow by the name of, what was his name now? It's on the tip of my tongue. He was the head of the Detroit field office. Call sign was W8DX. I can't, you know, how can a name like that slip your mind? Well, it did. Anyways, he came, knocked on the door. My mom answered, and he says, I want to see this broadcast station. She says, oh, go on downstairs. He's in his room, you know. And, he went down there and showed me his FCC badge and announced that he could confiscate everything in my room, including the bunk beds. And, at that point I realized I was in some kind of serious trouble and a guy's showing me the badge, you know. So, anyways, he found out my dad had passed away and I was, you know, an only child there. He decided to be lenient and, he told me, he said, I went, how much power are you running? And I told him how I was calculating it. And then he told me, I want you to back that down to about maybe 5 watts at the most. And I don't want to hear this beyond, and he gave me the parameters of streets. He said, I don't want to hear it beyond Michigan Avenue, Van Born, Telegraph. If I can hear it outside of that area, I'm coming back. if there's any bad language on this thing, I'm coming back. And Dick Cotton, that was his name. Good Lord, I can't know how these names, you know, when you get older, they start, you know, leaving your brain. Anyhow, he went to the Motor City Radio Club that met at Greenfield Village in the museum, the Henry Ford Museum. That's where they met. Wow, what a place to have a radio club meeting. All these old antique radios and things and communications devices, which they've taken out of there now for some reason. I think they lost their mind. But anyways, he told these guys, you make a ham out of him, I get him off the broadcast band. And I had a ton of Elmers at that point. Yeah, they were calling and asking, you want to go to the club meeting? You want to, you know, you want somebody help you study, you know? And that was really cool. That was really cool. But that's kind of a screwball story, but it's the truth. It actually happened. So, you know, when you start pulling, when people was talk about pulling wires up in trees when they're a kid, I always wonder what they're up to, you know, because I know what I was up to. But go ahead.
Oh yeah.
But how, you know, what did you think about shortwave? Were you tuned in and listening to shortwave? I mean, Citizens Band back then is much different than it is today. And you know, people there was like little communities where people would talk at night. You know, they'd get on the radio, and even during the day, you'd have a community. You might have 20, 30 people in an area, all talking on CB radios at different times of the day. They all got to know each other. They'd go for coffee and stuff like that. It was a different world. Was it like that where you were?
Oh yeah. Hi, Ted. It was a different world back in the 70s. There wasn't all the, you know, bad stuff going on or any of that on CB when I was a kid. And this was a small town too. So we didn't have that. And I was a little kid, and I tell you what, the first radio that I could really get, I don't know if you remember or if they had them where you were, but they had these, they were called green stamps, SNH green stamps. And you, if you went to the grocery store, they would give you these green stamps. And
they'd go in a book, and there was a catalog that told you how many books you'd have to have for certain things.
Right. So everybody in my family, I mean, we grew up in the west side of Paris. We didn't have a lot of money, but there was this radio that I wanted. It was a three-channel CB radio, walkie-talkie or something, and I had to have it. And you had to have like 10 gazillion green stamps or something. So everybody in my family was saving these green stamps for me, and I finally got 10 gazillion green stamps, and we carried them down. You know, it was like sacks of them, paper sacks. And we carried them down to the green stamp store to get this General Electric three-channel walkie-talkie. And I carried them up there and set them on the counter. And they said, we don't have it in stock. We'll have to order it, and it'll be 6 to 8 weeks. Well, man, I was heartbroken, but it did come in. I did get the radio, and that started my transmitting capability. But you ask about shortwave. Back then, I had the, you know, whatever I could scrounge up. And I think I had some old Hallicrafter stuff, just some cheapo kind of Hallicrafter receivers and different things. And, man, I would listen to, you know, all the stations, WRNO out of New Orleans. I was probably the only kid in the whole world, I thought, who knew what WV was. I think I still know their address, 2000 East County Road 58, Fort Collins, Colorado, 80924. Now, why in the world would I still remember that to, you know, 50 years later or whatever, but I do.
Well, you heard it a lot. It's like Winston tastes good. You know.
Yeah, I would send the QSL cards, you know, and all that, the station reports and all that to them, and man, they would all send me back this stuff, and you know, my parents, they didn't know they didn't know about me, but man, it was fun, you know.
Did you ever have a WPE number from Popular Electronics?
Oh yeah, had all that stuff, man. I mean, I had it. I had it bad, and I still have it bad, Ted. you know, to this day. So there you go.
Yeah, that's and here's what's really weird, and that is I go into a ham fest, and you know, you think with all the stuff I've got now. Of course, here's what I tell my two sons and I tell Holly, and that is, if I had access to what I have access to right now, 20 years ago, I would never have slept a minute. I wouldn't have been able to sleep.
No way.
Yeah. So anyhow, I mean, what we wound up doing back then, though, is we wound up, you know, wearing out Radio Shack and Lafayette Radio Electronics and Bernstein and Appleby catalogs. We'd wear them out, you know, looking at everything, have them memorized. I mean, you could look at it and say, yeah, that's a Hallicrafters SX100 and the difference between that and the Hallicrafters SX99. And you knew, I mean, you knew exactly what the, all like, because you studied it. You know, it was just, you know, one of these days I'm going to have a, what you call it. Well, see, I think that impregnates you. And now when you go to a ham fest, you walk through and it's like a dangerous place to be,
you know, right.
Because you've programmed yourself to this, you know, but I'm walking through a ham fest and what do I wind up buying? I wind up buying an old Browning Eagle, okay, Citizens Band two-piece radio, you know, and I take it home. It's like, what am I going to do with this? You know, who am I going to talk to on this thing? You know, and then you worry about, I wonder if it pings okay.
Right.
Anyways, you know, and then you pass where you pass down. You're going down an aisle and you see an old tram Titan in beautiful condition. You go, oh, guy. Maybe I shouldn't have bought the Browning. Maybe I should have got the tram, you know. And neither one of them are you going to talk on. You know, I mean, it's just like, so David, looks like you're about ready to say something.
No, it's, you know, I enjoy hearing the ping.
Right.
I think that thing has now officially been addict. It's in the attic along with a whole bunch of other stuff. And I was fascinated early on by these little radios that were made in Oak Park, Michigan called Citiphone. They were the Citiphone SS-23 channel synthesized radio. It was like a milestone radio at the time. And it was made by the Multi-Elmac company that made the Multi-Elmac ham gear. And I remember going to Oak Park and buying a Citiphone. And I could tell stories. Good Lord have mercy. I had one. Another radio I bought was an Ico. I think it was a Sentinel Pro that I got from a CB shop in Detroit. And my mom would drive me down there every week, and I'd have to put, you know, like $5 on it from some way that I had scrounged up $5, either selling zip code directories or something, you know. And she finally got sick of it, and she slipped the guy the balance and made him pretend as if I had paid it off, you know. And I brought it home, and I was so disappointed because the transmit audio was horrible. But later I found it was just the microphone because it was a standard. That standard design, 6BQ5 modulator, 6BQ5 final, you know, and it's hard to make a mistake with that design. But the Courier 23 was like that, the Comstat 25A from Lafayette, the Cobra Cam 88, they all use that same configuration. And later on, when I changed microphones on it, it was like, oh my God, what a difference. Anyways, but anyhow, that's all my junk, and I don't want to talk about that. What was your first set of radio gear? What did you acquire? What was the thing you wanted the most and wound up getting, or you know, or eventually wound up getting?
Well, I mean, you're talking about going to the ham fest now and picking up all this old gear. I do the same thing, and when I talked to you a few weeks ago or a month or two ago, whenever it was, at we were at MFJ at the big customer day down there. There was a guy in the parking lot that had a GE Super Bass. Now, later on in my little radio career or whatever, I was probably, this was in the mid 80s, so I was probably about 16. That radio was like $600, and it was a General Electric 40 channel CB radio, and there's no way I could have ever afforded that. And there was a guy out there in the parking lot at MFJ. He had one, and I bought it. You know, I still hadn't put it on the air. I don't even have an antenna for it, but it's up here on the shelf. And I do that too. I buy the old trams and, you know, the old helicrafters and different receivers that I couldn't get when I was a kid. And most of them have never been fired up, you know, since I've had them.
Yeah, I wish I've said this before, and maybe it's a real crazy idea, but I think with the availability of older Citizens Band stuff, you know, and antennas and everything, I think it would be cool if the FCC would say, okay, it's legal for hams to get on and use your ham call sign and talk to each other, and then maybe like do local nets on CB like you would on 2 meters, but now you're surrounded by a bunch of people who want to get a ham license. You know, so I don't know. That makes sense to me. Plus, it gives all of us old guys the opportunity to operate that equipment and from a nostalgic standpoint and have a whole lot of fun doing it, talking to other radio hams, and then being able to talk to CBers that, you know, that have questions about the hobby, want to get in the hobby, or once you get to talking, who knows what kind of interest you can spark. Now, is that a crazy idea?
Well, maybe, but, you know, it might work. I don't know. But to really answer your question, what you asked me earlier, I finally got a ham license in 1992. And I was probably, I don't know, whatever. I was in my early 20s, and I went over to HamCom. That was the first ham fest I ever went to. And back then that was in Arlington, Texas. And it was a big deal, big, big deal. There was radios, like every kind of radio in the world was there. All the manufacturers were there. And, there was an old ham that I worked for. He had a TV shop here in Paris, Texas. And he took me over there with him, and he was an old AM operator. And, you know, he hated that CB stuff, and he hated for me to even talk about it. But anyway, I went over there. I ended up, I think, testing there and getting a license at HamCom that year. And, you know, there was all these radios, but he wouldn't let me buy anything. He was like an Elmer now. He wanted me to buy, this DX100 and it Heathkit plate modulated AM. I mean, it would be junk probably by today's standards. And
anyway. I own two of them. So careful here,
right?
Careful.
Right. No, I know. But so anyway, we get this old DX100 plate modulated Heathkit junker home. And I mean, I wanted one of those Kenwoods or something, but you know, we had to get this plate modulated junker home, and it was bad looking, but he showed me and helped me, and we totally rebuilt it, went through the manual step by step and rebuilt everything. And that was my first rig. That was my first transmitter. I don't even remember I was using a Hammerlin receiver and, HQ 100 or a 110 or something. But anyway, that was my first station, but I didn't like it. I never liked it. You know, it sounded good and all that, but nobody was running AM. And I made a few CW contacts after I got the, you know, got proficient enough to at least send 5 words a minute. And, but my first real ham rig though, it was a Kenwood TS-520, and right behind it was a Yaesu FT-101 EE. And both of those, man, I still have a weak spot for those. Anytime I see them, I mean, I've got them stacked up out in the barn. Don't tell my wife, Ted, but they are stacked up out there. I love them.
Hey, let me ask you a question now. This is an age-old question that I've had in my head all along. I had a Yaesu 101 EE, and I think the EE was the one that didn't have the speech processor. The E had the speech processor. EE did not.
Right.
Okay. So, but I've got the EE, And I go over to, and I'm using it all the time. I go over to a friend's house, and he's got a Kenwood 520.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat down and listened to that radio, and I was like, oh, my God. I mean, the 520 just sounded so smooth, you know, compared to that double E. It was kind of harsh, you know, and brash, and, you know, I don't know. I couldn't talk about selectivity and sensitivity because I really wasn't even thinking that way. What I was thinking about is when he turned on his 520, it just sounded beautiful to me. You know, it was like, so all I had in my head was, I got to sell this 101E and get me a 520. You know, and I think I wound up with a 5, no, I'm sorry. I sold it, but then later I wound up with an 820, which had basically the same kind of receiver. But now did you, maybe you're bringing both of these rigs up. What was your opinion?
Hi, let me tell you. Yesterday, all right. Well, I mean, we take trade-ins at the store all the time. They ship them in from all over the country and all over, I mean, from everywhere. So I've got a guy, Steve. He's a big-time DXer. He works for us there. And good guy. But he, where he works is probably 30 feet behind me. A radio came on. It was tuned up on 40 meters, and there was some guys talking. And, man, I immediately recognized the sound. And I said, hey, Steve, that's a Kenwood, isn't it? He said, yeah, it's an 820. I mean, Kenwood, I mean, whew, I got to be careful because I sell lots of radios from lots of people.
But you also have to classify what era we're talking about too. You know,
yes.
things change over, and they have changed radically amongst who makes, you know what. But now we're to the point where all of these radios are so good that I think a person would be really hard pressed. It then becomes only preference. I think I don't think it gets down to specs. I think it gets down to preference more than anything else.
It does. It gets down to preference now and. You know, what are you really into? What form of digital or, you know, whatever. But, you know, I learned years ago, you know, just like you did, from the FT-101 to the Kenwood 520, which one had the best audio. And, man, I love Yaesu, and I have them stacked up everywhere. And I love Icom. I have lots of Icom. I've got lots of Kenwood, too. And that 0520, 820, all of those old rigs, man, I mean, I buy them every time I see them and just pile them up. I'm a hoarder. Some of these days, I'll probably be on TV or something. And, you know,
you're
if I ever die
come,
or whatever.
You're going to have to come and visit sometime. Because once you walk through here, you won't feel so bad, will he, David?
No, he won't.
And ours, I mean, we've been collecting old broadcast transmitters, you know. We've got two AMs and an FM out in the garage, you know. So it's like, why? Why do we have these things here? You know, it's like, I don't know. You know, it's like...
Well, we had the room for it.
Yeah, we had the room.
Hey, you don't have a Bauer, by the way, do you, laying around somewhere, an old Bauer transmitter?
No, but I've worked on many of the 707s, the 1 kilowatt jobs. Those were solid transmitters. I might know where there is one though. I don't know. Go ahead.
I'd kind of like to find one. I'm just saying. But
why?
I don't know.
Why a Bauer? I'm just curious.
Well, here's all right. So you know, growing up as a kid, I'm a radio nut and all that. And the local AM radio station, they had a Bauer 707 out there. I think it had a pair of 4400s modulating a pair of 4400s up in the, remember it? Didn't they have a little glass
yep.
thing where you could look in there and see them? I mean, that is so awesome. Mm-hmm. I would love to have one of those, you know, out here glowing.
Well, the Collins 20V had the same thing, the 4400s in it. And RCA though made a beautiful transmitter, the 1M, if you could find one of those, and it ran 833s with looks like fruit jars hanging on their side.
Oh, yeah.
You know? But what I was going to say about the Bauer, you know, those were kits. The Bauer transmitter
really?
Came in kit form. So some engineer at that station built it. I don't know that they supplied them as an assembled transmitter. I think they were everywhere you went. They were kits. And the one thing I remember, though, the plate contactor in it, when you turn the plate on, it sounded like a loud shotgun going off. You know, and of course there wasn't that much voltage. You're only running a kilowatt, but the contactor would just scare you to death. I mean, when you would turn that thing on, it was a bang. You know, and it was like, holy cow. You know, you expect, you know, these 100 kilowatt rigs we're running out here at the shortwave, when you turn them on, they're far less impressive than a Bauer 707. That's the truth. Oh. But now I'll keep my eyes open for a Bauer. Those were in. I think the company was called something like Elcom Bauer or Elcom Bauer. There's a guy, though, by the name of Charlie Goodrich. I can't remember where Charlie is. I mean, if you get on the internet and look him up, just put in Bauer transmitters or McMartin transmitters. His name is Charlie Goodrich, and he may know where there's one sitting because he's, for years, he supplied parts and know-how and manpower to bring one up online. And actually, David and Matt, my two sons, and myself rebuilt one of those things. And
wow.
When it was on the air, it sounded like a jukebox, man. I mean, it really sounded good. And we bought a brand new solid state transmitter. I think it was an Omnitronics or something, yeah. But that Bauer, man, it just, the Bauer would leave it sitting in audio dust. I mean, it just sounded so much better. So anyway.
Ted, I tell you, I've always loved radio, and it carried over into my adult life. And I never got into broadcast. I wanted to, but I never did and took another path. But I ended up marrying a DJ, an announcer, Christine. She's my wife. And I met her. I was in recording some spots for a car dealership and met her, and you know, the rest of that is history too. And we right now where I'm sitting, I'm in my ham shack, and I'm surrounded by radio gear, but right behind me is her little voice console where she still does a lot of broadcast spots and commercial spots now. So, I mean, I love it. I mean, I don't know what happened, but somewhere along the line, radio just it got in me. And you know, so now I sell radios, and man, for a long time I slept, ate, and everything radio, but pretty much it's still the same way. I'm not as active anymore on amateur or even shortwave listening like I used to be, but maybe someday I'll get back into it on that level. But you know, we're buying and selling them every day, and when I come home, it's only maybe in the winter time I get in here and do, you know, a little casual operating and shortwave listening. But I am still very much 100% radio. It's nuts, man.
Do you? Let me ask you a question. Do you carry any small shortwave receivers at Main Trading?
Yeah, we carry the Sea Crane. I carry a lot of their stuff, and the Texan. I can't remember the model number now. PL880 and some of the other stuff.
That's a sweet radio. That PL880 of the Texan. Yes, very much so. Actually, the Texans are. I guess I want to say the price point per what you're getting. The Texans, I think, a far better deal than the stuff from Sea Crane. That's my own personal opinion, but I've been kind of intrigued by them. And then I got to know the folks a little bit at the Texan company. I saw something posted online that said that they made 30,000 shortwave radios per day. And I said, somebody's got the decimal in the wrong place. So I called and I talked to this guy. He was one of their public relations people. It's amazing. You can pick up a cell phone and call China, you know. But anyways, I called him. I called them, I should say. They put him on the line. And he started telling me, he says, no. He says, we make 30,000 multiband radios a day. And my mind wouldn't even wrap around it. It was like, what in the world? I said, well, where do they go? Well, at that time, he said, all of your Radio Shack stores carry three or four of our radios because they make Grundig, and they make Eton, and I'm trying to think, all these different brand names that all comes from the Texon company. So if you go and buy a Grundig, you're buying a Texon. So anyways, you know, he's telling me that, and then he tells me, well, we ship to Africa. These radios go into Russia. A lot of radios going into Russia. And he said, and then he started telling me that there was massive areas of China that doesn't have government power. And, of course, I didn't know that. How do you know? I mean, you don't. You think the Internet's everywhere. You think everything's everywhere. And he said, he kind of surprised me. He said, if there's no power, what are they gonna have? He said, they're not watching satellite TV. I said, no. He said, then you have your portable shortwave radio, run on battery or crank up. And then he asked me the question. He said, do you have any idea how many people in China? I just sat there stoned. I was like, oh, my God, you know. So, you know, those guys are, and he sent me pictures. I really ought to post these things somewhere. I don't think they're on the Internet anywhere, all these young kids in white lab coats, as far as the eye could see, on four or five floors, sitting at soldering stations, doing something having to do with those radios. And, of course, they had their automatic circuit board makers and all that. They had all pictures of all that stuff. And the kids live in dorms right there at the radio company, and they put on shindigs and talent shows and all kinds of stuff. And he sent me documentation, all that, and it just blew me away. I just thought, you know, so I have a very high regard for the Texon folks. I really do. They're industrious, and they put out some really sweet products that have been friends to shortwave listeners, is what they've been. So anyways, enough of that. So you need to occupy my brain, shut me up, because I relate to things and I get to talking. But you do carry the 880. That 880. What is it now? What's the 880 sell for? Do you know right off the? I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm just, if you know, then that's fine. If you don't, then you know we'll look it up online.
Yeah, don't put me on the spot, because I put an email blast out tonight before I came on the show, and I discounted it. I've also got some cool discount codes for all your listeners out there tonight if they were to go to our website. But I'm getting that pulled up. It's pretty cheap. I think normally it's like $159. Hang on, if I can get my internet working here. I live out in the country now, Ted. I used to live in town. So out in the country, my internet is not what it once was. Let's see, $141. But if you go to our website, can I do this, by the way?
Sure, absolutely.
All right, okay. All right, if you go to our website tonight or tomorrow and enter, you know, go ahead and put your products in the cart or whatever, and the website is mtcradio.com, like Main Trading Company, mtcradio.com. Check out, go through all the deal. It's going to ask you if you've got a coupon code or whatever. Just type in QSO, and it's going to give you a discount. But before any discounts or whatever, that radio is $141 tonight. And then, you know, we've got all the Black Friday and all that promotions going on, but there is a coupon code, QSO, tonight and tomorrow. It'll give you a pretty good discount off of everything else. So we also carry some of the other Texan brands locally in the store. A lot of the stuff isn't online, but we've got plenty of radios in the store, that's for sure.
Well, you know, it's hard to refer somebody. I get calls and I get emails. Where can I get a good shortwave radio? You know, and I hate sending people to eBay because it's so impersonal and you don't know who you're dealing with and whatnot. You know, so it's difficult to do that. And so I'm now glad I can say, hey, call up Main Trading Company and talk to them and ask them what they've got in stock. Because there's a lot of people that are that are for some reason they come to us asking, you know, what's a good shortwave radio? Matter of fact, Holly asked me the other day, somebody gave it to her and said, they sent her an email and said, recommend a shortwave radio. I want to get it as a gift. And, of course, we're coming up on Christmas. So, and even if it's a ham, he's got a ham receiver, there's nothing like a portable shortwave. My goodness. I mean, it's so, you know, you go out, you can sit outside under the stars in a lounge chair with a radio and listen. You know, you can take it places and go places. And if you're, I mean, I know a lot of times I've gone to shopping centers where you would think there'd be a lot of noise, but I get out of the vehicle and go sit down on a bench somewhere and turn the radio on. And man, it was, you know, no interference, clear as a bell, you know, and had a lot of fun listening to all kinds of stuff that I just normally wouldn't have time to listen to. So that's it. Well, now, you know, you guys carry, you got, what all do you have? I mean, I know you've been at this a while, so now you've got all kinds of things. I'm going to assume you've got, you're selling different types of antennas. You probably have feed line and coax. You probably got microphone line. What all do you have? What is it that you find that folks are looking for that you've got in stock?
Well, Ted, we carry all kinds of stuff. Of course, we carry all the big names, Kenwood, ICOM, Yaesu, and Elinco. And almost everything is in stock all the time. Unless, you know, I mean, here we go into the holidays or show season or whatever. It could, you know, I mean, but there's nothing that's made out there that's over a week out usually. If it's not in stock, we'll have it soon. But we carry different shortwave radios. Of course, you named it, Feedline. We carry all the MFJ products, Ameritron, Cushcraft, High Gain, and all of that. We carry Jetstream, and I mean, I don't even know. I mean, we carry a lot of stuff, and then I still dabble in the surplus market. So you never know what's going to show up on our website. We carry a lot of different stuff, Ted, and locally our store, you know, the Radio Shack store here shut down a couple of years ago. So locally, we carry, you know, a lot of that stuff, you know, the HDMI cables, the different adapters or connectors or, you know, all the stuff you would go into a Radio Shack at one time and find. We carry all of that locally, but you don't see all that on our website. But lots of stuff, man. We're even a post office right in our own. You know, it's a small town, 25,000 people. We have a post office in our store. So some of the hams even come in, and we have our own, like, round 8 postmark stamp, like, you know, like any post office would have. But ours says Main Trading Company. So the hams come in, and they want their QSL cards postmarked with our stamp. And so that's kind of cool. But all kind of stuff. You never know what's going to show up online or in the store. I'm always looking for a deal, and so there you go.
I've been looking through your website here, and I'm just, it is just wild the amount of stuff that you have in here. I mean, right down to the stuff that you got a section here for stocking stuffers. You've got another thing for something different. I mean, there's all kinds of neat stuff in here.
You know, Boneyard as is junk.
There you go.
Yeah, there is some kind of, what is this here? Used Yaesu FT620B, 6-meter ham radio transceiver. There you go. I was just looking. You see, these are things you don't find in a lot of places. You know, you just don't find stuff like this.
He's got the Kenwood THF6 up here in the boneyard. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff in here.
Yeah, we're going to stop talking on the radio and start looking at the...
That's really what I've been doing.
At the website.
You guys have been talking about the start of everything here. Well, I've been looking at the website, getting ideas for... I'm going to send you a couple of links for Christmas presents for me.
Go ahead.
That's great. We take trade-ins, and that's our big deal. Even our name, Main Trading Company, there's a story behind that, you know. Why would you name your store Main Trading Company? And, you know, that was our eBay username, you know, Main Trading Company. And we had to get a DBA license or whatever here locally to set that up, and that was it. It was our eBay username. When we finally started the store, we couldn't afford even to get, you know, to change our name or do anything different. So just went with that. So that's where our name came from. But we still trade, and hams all over the country send radios in. I mean, daily, that UPS truck backs up and sends their trade. You know, we get trade-ins in daily of all kinds of stuff. So we do have guys that check them out. And you mentioned that boneyard or whatever. If something comes in and it doesn't quite make the cut or whatever, and we trade for broke stuff too. I don't care. We'll trade for anything. If something's broken or not working just right or missing something, we go ahead and sell it. We put it on there and describe it like it is, you know, because there's probably a kid out there like I was, or somebody out there that doesn't mind tinkering with it, like that old Yaesu 620. They could get that up and going, you know, no problem. But we don't have time to fool with it, and we just, you know, ship it on out. Put it on the website, tell what we know about it, and get it gone.
Here's something on your website I want to ask you about in a couple things here. But you have the, what is this thing? It's the Shark RF Open Spot. UHF digital radio IP gateway. I'm having trouble reading my own computer screen, but nonetheless, that's what that is. And that is primarily, now let me ask a question. I was thinking that these things were only used with folks that are doing DMR, but I see D-Star listed here as well as Fusion. So how do those work with D-Star?
Well, honestly, Ted, I was very much afraid you would start asking me about stuff like this, and so here's the deal.
You just make up something. I mean, so,
no.
That's what the other ham radio stores, other ham radio stores. That's what they do. You know, you call them.
We never make up stuff. I am pretty weak on all the some of the newer digital technology, D-Star, Fusion, and DMR. I know a little bit about it, and we sell a lot of it, and I talk on some of it, and it's pretty awesome stuff. The way you can link repeaters and reflectors and groups and rooms and all this stuff, and it's pretty awesome. But you know, this Shark RF open spot, we've been selling it now probably about a year, and it's pretty phenomenal. You know, how many we sold and what it will actually do. Now I use one at the store with DMR primarily, and, it's a digital gateway, and you plug it into your internet network and you set it up for whatever you're using, DMR, Fusion, or D-Star. And, you know, it will receive. If you take a talkie, you can, it has a radio, it has a receiver and a transmitter built into it. You talk to this open spot device and it puts it out on the internet and it connects to wherever you tell it to connect, whatever reflector or room or talk group or whatever you're using. There you go. And a lot of people are running a mobile now, and they take it and put it in their vehicle, with a hotspot, maybe from their cell phone or whatever. And it's pretty cool because if I go to a ham radio show in Starkville, Mississippi, I can take my handy talkie and talk right back home to my home repeater in Paris, Texas. It is slick stuff. Now, don't ask me how it works. I can't tell you that.
Let me say this though. I had a chance to talk. I was talking to Ray Novak. Excuse me. And anyhow, we picked up a couple of radios that supposedly has DMR. That's a DMR radio.
Yes.
And so Matt's got one, David's got one, and nobody has successfully been able to put a code plug in them for Nashville. And I mean, and I thought, you know what? This is a little bit too complicated. You know, I mean, now what do I mean by that is, I mean, there's a lot of things like building from scratch and designing circuits and all that that are complicated. But for the average ham, a technician, a guy just passed his technician test, you know, it's a little bit much. Seems like D-Star is a lot more user-friendly. Am I correct in that?
You are correct, Ted. And let me throw this out there. You know, myself, I'm an HF operator, and I'm a shortwave listener, and, you know, a lot of this stuff is pretty new to me. So, you know, I'm selling a ton of it. I've got some guys that know it real well. When you call in and answer or call in and talk to us, I'll put them on the phone. They can really help you. But if I was a new guy coming in, or even an old guy that's just like me, just an old HF hound or whatever, a DXer, casual operator that's wanting to get into some of this new digital stuff, you bet. System Fusion or D-Star is the way to go.
Well, it's, you know, see, when you get up around my age, what happens is you can't remember where you set your HT down.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
Like, well, did I have it in the living room? You know, David, did you move my HT? Anyways, tell me a little bit about this. I'd like to know, and I think you probably have. And if you don't, we'll figure out something else. But the ICOM 31A, this handheld D-Star radio. Do you know much about that thing?
Yeah. I've got one. I'm looking at it right now. There's another one in there by my easy chair. There's another one in there by my, well, in my nightstand. The batteries are probably dead on most of them, but I know a little bit about them. We have a D-Star repeater here in Paris, Texas, and it works really good. Has very good range, and the audio on D-Star, or pretty much any of the digital stuff, it sounds really good. It's a little different, though. It's a little different than maybe what you're accustomed to on FM, but it's still really good. So the 31A you mentioned, that's a single band 70 centimeter UHF radio. It'll do analog or digital, which is the D-Star side. And, man, if they work really good. We sell more now of the ID51, which is a dual band radio, but I mean, they have a GPS built in. I mean, you don't even have to program these radios now. You just step outside in view of the sky, and it'll pull up all the D-Star repeaters around you, like two, or is it three? It's three button clicks, bang, you're programmed. If you're in Paris, Texas, or Paris, France, it doesn't matter. And you can have it programmed and up and running and talking back home in a minute. It's,
now, when you
it's
said
nuts.
You said the ID51, isn't that the ID5100, or is it an ID51?
ID51A, Alpha. The new one, I think, is the ID51A+2. It adds some enhancements, and it's pretty awesome too. Kenwood also has a D-Star radio now. So, the big talk, you know, out there on the reflectors and forums and internets and interwebs and all that, is who's going to win out. It's the days of VHS and Betamax.
Let me tell you a little bit about the ICOM IC7610. This is a high-performance RMDR receiver, transceiver. This thing will pick out the faintest of signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. And the 7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio, and it's going to change the world's definition. That's the ICOM 7610. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/amateur. That's ICOMAmerica.com/amateur.
This is Michael Coulter, Whiskey 8, Charlie, India, WHCI, with the Dayton Hamvention. And I want to welcome all of you and invite all of you to come in May of 2019 to our hamvention, which will be in just outside of Xenia, Ohio, X-E-N-I-A, Ohio. And it is the biggest celebration of amateur radio, shortwave listening, electronics of all sorts. It's a celebration of people who love that. And it is everything that you could possibly want there. So come on out, join us. And if you have any questions, look at our website, hamvention.org.
Is it going to be D-Star, DMR, or System Fusion? Well, the big bombshell last year was Kenwood came out with a D-Star radio. So you've got two major manufacturers now on the D-Star platform, which is the largest platform out there in amateur radio as far as digital. And you've got full backing and lots of help from the manufacturers and tech support to get you on the air. I mean, that's saying something.
Now, you're talking about the 51. That's an HT?
Yes.
And that's
they
what
have
I'm,
a mobile, too.
Okay, now let me ask you this question. What do you say? I mean, what can a person get in the ID31A? What can you get into that HT? How much does it take to get that? A lot of people wanting to fool around with this stuff, they want to get into D-Star. I'm not sure an HT is the best way to go, but it surely would be the simplest way, I think, especially if you're in range of D-Star repeaters. What are you selling them for? What's your best price for the QSO listener to call up and say, hey, Richard, I want to order one of these 31As or 31A Plus handheld HTs. What are they going for out the door? Come on, now you get with it here. Tell us about this.
I can't tell you, Ted. I can't tell you. Really, the 51A is where I would try to push you to, because it is a dual band. The 31A Plus, that's brand new. I just saw those. Matter of fact, back a couple of months ago, we went to Japan to the big Tokyo Ham Fair. My wife and I and the two kids went over there, and the 31A Plus was just kind of debuted over there. So it's coming here. It's already here. But if it were me, I would buy a 51A dual band. You get all the features and all that. It would be best if I were going to buy one and I was just a guy out there. And really, I wouldn't even buy one on the internet. This is trade secrets right here. I would not buy one on the internet. I would call your local store and stick with your mom and pops and your local stores to keep them in business.
Well, let me tell you something.
Yes, sir.
I bought, you would never believe this. Holly bought it for me, and that was a high end phonograph cartridge. Okay. I mean, this was a Rega Exact, to be exact. And they normally sell for about $500. Well, she found this great deal on eBay on this Exact cartridge. Well, she ordered it and got it. I put it in the turntable, and I said, something ain't right. This ain't right. Something is wrong. Pull it out, looked at it. I mean, it was a dead ringer. You could put it right beside the real Rega Exact, and they looked exactly the same. They weighed the same, everything about them. But the one that she got the discount on was a Chinese knockoff. They had built this thing. Now, I'm going to tell you something. They do this, and I know this for a fact. They do this in the ham radio arena. Sometimes what you're buying, if you're buying a brand new rig and you're getting it off of eBay, how do you know whether or not it's a genuine ICOM or Kenwood or whatever? You don't. There's no way to tell. They can copy these things down to the last little nut and bolt. Now, if you're really sharp, you can tell them apart, because there's going to be things that are slightly different. But the average guy is not going to be able to spot it and say, oh, look at this. This is a knockoff, you know. So anyways, when you were saying, you know, buy local from a local shop like Main Trading Company, You know, and even for as that goes, even Roger up in Ohio at R&L.
You bet.
You know, that's where you need to go. Don't mess around with especially when you're spending money on something that you're going to use that you've saved up for and stuff. Don't mess around with these things on eBay because you don't know what you're getting. And anyhow, and the only reason
that's
I was mentioning this 31A because I had heard about it. I knew it was a UHF radio. But I also knew it was kind of like an entry-level thing. You know, somebody wants to get into D-Star. This might be the ticket for starting out. And that's why I was asking about it. But let me ask, if you did upgrade from the 31 to the 51, I won't ask you total price if you can't tell us what you're selling them for. If that's a deep, dark secret, you know, and if you were to tell us, you'd have to shoot us or something. About how much more is it to upgrade? I mean, are you looking at $100, $200? Where, what, approximately, what area to go from the 31 to the 51?
Well, let's go here first. The 31A was discontinued, so they've got the Plus, and it's coming. I'm looking on the ICOM website now.
That was the radio I was talking about. The 31A Plus. I'm just saying 31A like. You know, you start talking about Drake transceivers, you say, well, the TR-4C, well, there's a TR-4CW and so on and so forth. You just kind of say TR-4. You know, you drop the other things on it. But, I was wondering, because a person like, you know, okay, Christmas is coming up, and folks are going to start looking, especially if you're an XYL and you listen to this radio show because it's like forced on in the room you're at. And you're thinking about, well, what am I going to get him, you know, for Christmas? Or, and for that matter, it could be the other way around. What am I going to get her for Christmas? And that was what I was trying to kind of explore, because we do have the season coming up. And I know there's a lot of folks, even though D-Star has been around a long time, based on the radio shows we've done, there are people that are just discovering the digital stuff. And they're like, they heard about it, but they didn't even bother to find out. Now, all of a sudden, they're curious. So that was my reason behind that. And I just thought, well, if you can upgrade, you know, is it expensive to upgrade, or is it a moderate amount? But I don't want to take you down a road that you can't go down, and because I don't understand all of that. I do know that your pricing over there is extremely competitive. In other words, your person calls up and asks you how much, the price they get is going to be a pretty doggone good one. And so that's, you know, and that's just a given. So anyhow, what do you see as far as, you know, you're in Paris, Texas, and you've got a D-Star repeater or several. How does that work out?
Well, we have a D-Star repeater, and there's a couple of analog / system fusion repeaters here, which that's Yaesu's brand of digital. We do not have a DMR repeater here, and I mean, there's activity on both. So, you know, I don't know. It's kind of weird. I hear tons of people on the D-Star machine, and I hear lots of people over on the Fusion machine as well. And I hear more on analog. I mean, just regular 2 meter or 70 centimeter analog. I still hear way more on analog than I do on the digital modes here. But that's, you know, that could change anytime.
You know, I have complained about this, and I've said, you know, we are missing activity on 2 meters. And I know we would leave Nashville and say drive to Detroit, and David can tell you we could get on a dozen repeaters and never get one answer. No one come back to us, just dead, you know. And I've noticed the same thing on Echolink. So I begin to ask the question: is it because of the interest in the digital modes that people are just not listening to the analog stuff? They're listening digital. And that's where the crowd is. I don't know. I really don't know, because I know analog-wise they're not there. Now, there was a guy called in from, I believe it was it Dallas, Texas, or the repeater that they were talking about?
Yes.
Okay. And he said that they had all kinds of nets on their repeaters about all kinds of crazy things. They had cooking nets and different kind of nets. And he said that when the repeater goes dead, if nobody talks on it for a period of time, an announcement comes on and says, the repeater has been silent for however long. Would somebody please start a net? I thought that was so cool because they're keeping the activity there. So do you think if folks are wanting to make 2-meter contacts and, you know, going around in their automobiles and whatnot, that the lack of activity, some of it could be due to the fact that folks are listening to the digital stuff, and they maybe should get a radio with digital modes in it so that they can participate and be a part of that?
Maybe, Ted. I don't know. I travel a lot because we do a lot of HamFest. Like I said, we do 28 shows a year. That's where we're going to end up this year anyway. I have one more to go. And I travel a lot. And, you know, I put my radio when I'm traveling on National Simplex 146.520 because that's what we used to do, you know. But like you said, I rarely hear anything. And so I don't know. I really would, and it aggravates me too, because I love radio. I mean, I love it, Ted. I love it. Nobody loves radio any more than me. And I want the hobby to grow, and I want new hams in, and, you know, I want to see it just keep booming and growing. But I get really aggravated when I travel across the country and I hear radio silence, you know, and I get on local repeaters and I don't hear anything, you know. D-Star, Fusion, and Analog, I travel all over, and you know, unless the repeater is linked, many times, Ted, I don't hear anything, and it's kind of disheartening. I want people to get in there and talk, and how you do it, I don't know. When I first came in, I mean, the repeaters were all, everybody was talking. I mean, I don't know what happened, you know. Either they're on digital now or they're watching TV. I don't know.
Well, I wondered about that because it used to be, I don't know, when I was a kid, the first time I ever saw 2 meters, I went to a guy's house and he had a big old green Motorola box full of tubes, you know, and but the audio sounded so cool, sounded really good. It was like an FM broadcast station, you know, and I says, I want to do that, you know. But this crazy thing he had an electric motor in it turning all the while, which I guess that was pretty standard with some of the Motorola stuff. They had electric motor that would turn a generator. I don't know. I never did get into one of those things, but he had those. And then later on, there was a lot of those green Motorola boxes going around in the back, the trunk of guys' cars, and they had the little control head up front, just like the police, and they were talking on 2 meters, you know, and that was, I thought it was really cool. And that's all, of course, all of that changed. Now, of course, we're a lot more narrow banded, so the audio doesn't sound as good. And, but I can't figure out where, I can't figure out where the lack of interest is. It seems to me that, you know, you'd have 2 meters on in the shack all the time, you know, put 5.2 on or the local repeater all the time, and you'd have it on. You'd just monitor. You hear somebody yell, go in there and jump in and sit down and talk to them, you know. People talking and to each other on their way to work in the morning, and guys that are, you know, some older retired folks on the air talking to the guys driving to work. I mean, it just seems like that's a natural, and I can't figure out why it isn't happening. Something stopped it. Something impeded all of that. And I'd just love to find out what it is. You know, I mean, now, some people blame cell phones for that. But people don't rag chew on their cell phones on the way to work. They don't do that. They don't rag chew on cell phones at night, you know, like we used to do in ham radio. And that was all, you know, VHF stuff. So it's something. Maybe somebody out there listening has the answer to this. I hope so. If they do, you know, send it. Email at WTWW.us and tell Richard and I and David what's what's gone awry here. Why are we?
Yeah, I want to fix it.
Well, that's how I feel. I feel like, you know, what do we got to do? I mean, maybe we can motivate people to monitor more. Maybe if people monitored more, they would talk more. You know, that could be part of it. I don't know. Just, I just wished I did know. Let me ask you a question now. Do you work much HF mobile?
I used to. I don't anymore, and I don't have a good excuse either. I put a camper top on the back end of my one ton truck that I pull the trailer with to go to all the shows, and I had to take my antenna off. But I used to. I up until probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, I used to be pretty active. Matter of fact, that was any HF that I've used to do was all out of the mobile, you know, since I've had the store open. And that was my deal. I loved HF mobile. I still love it. I need to get my antenna back on my truck somehow.
What kind of an antenna did you run on the truck?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. My favorite antenna is a Texas bug catcher. Henry Allen, K5BUG was his old call sign. He used to, he still does. He makes the Texas bug catcher, and it's a great big, cool looking coil, and you put a mast on it and you get the coil above the cab with a big whip, maybe a capacity hat if you want it. And man, that is the best antenna. I don't care what you're running. I'll put the bug catcher against any screwdriver or whatever. It's the best antenna you can run on the low bands on HF out there. But now I cheated and I feel bad, but I traded and I took an antenna in on trade a few years ago. It was made by Stealth, a Stealth 9310, and it's an automatic antenna. It covers 160 meters through 10 meters, and it'll tune in like a half a second. It doesn't have any screwdriver motors or any of that in it, and it works really well. It's not near as efficient as a bug catcher, but for convenience, it really was cool. And I still have it. It's out in my barn, a Stealth 9310. And look those up on the web. That's an awesome antenna. You can also buy them. A very similar antenna put out by ICOM, and I can't remember. It's an AH710 or something like that. But it's a cool mobile antenna with no moving parts.
Let me ask you a question on the bug catcher. How do you tune it? Or is it, in other words, with the, like Matt on his car, he has the large, enormous what is it? It's Tar Heel. Isn't it?
Yeah, it's, yeah.
The big Tar Heel antenna, and of course he has a little switch inside, and he can go up and down and tune precisely and whatnot. So how would you tune the bug catcher? Do you have to go outside and change a tap or something, or is there some method of tuning it from inside the car?
Man, and I really hate to talk negative or anything like that, but you remember back in the 70s and 80s, if you pulled up at a ham fest and you'd look out there on the parking lot, there was no motorized antennas or Tar Heels or screwdrivers or any of that. They had these big, huge coils. Well, that's what the bug catcher is. So it has taps on the coil, and you do have to get out and change and unplug and plug in for your different band. Now, we've traded off convenience for efficiency, I believe, in many of these mobile HF antennas now. And it is cool. It's very cool. Just like I said on that Stealth antenna, to be able to set in your vehicle and change bands or whatever. But that bug catcher, I mean, it's got a big open air coil. But the deal is, to answer your question, you do have to get out. If you're on 80 meters and you want to go to 20, you do have to get out and unplug that 80-meter tap and plug it into your 20-meter tap. But I promise you, that antenna will outperform anything out there.
That's amazing. I mean, I've heard about the Texas bug catcher. Talked to a lot of guys running mobile that had them, you know. And
yeah.
And I'd seen them in the parking lots, like you said, at Hamfest. You'd see them, you know. But I didn't. I really didn't know that much about the things, you know. So they're still available. Do you sell them by any chance?
Well, just by happens, I do. I sure do, Ted.
Well, you know, it's even though I know it's exhausting to pull off onto the shoulder, get out of your car, and go around and change a tap on a coil. I know it's draining, you know, and probably when you get back in the car from changing that tap, you're just so depressed because some friend of yours has a motorized tar heel or whatever. But from what I understand, and I've heard this before, that the bug catcher has some sort of magic RF about it that it just radiates. And once they're tuned up, right, it has something to do with the coil being so high up in the air, and especially if you put a hat on it, you're as they used to say in Citizens Band, you're walking the dog. Okay, that's what I don't know if you ever heard that, but that's what they would say. So how's my signal over there? Oh man, you're just walking the dog, you know. So anyhow, telling tales.
Ted, it's magic. That's the thing. That's the whole thing with radio. Man, I love radio, and that's one of our little slogans that we use in our company. We've been spreading the love since 2009. I mean, I love it, and the bug catcher is part of our story. I've been running Texas Bug Catcher on my stuff personally, you know, since I've been a ham, and it's anything on our website, it's the same thing. I either run it or I've tried it and I like it. You won't see anything on my website that I don't agree with. And there's some stuff from some big manufacturers that we don't have on our website, and that's right or wrong or whatever. We don't have to carry it, you know? So, but the Texas Bug Catcher, that's one of them. And I love it. And
We're getting close on time. And I wanted I wanted you to talk about your upcoming Christmas promotion or something. Holly and somebody else was telling me about it, but I don't quite understand it. I don't know if you want to talk about it yet, 'cause we're before Thanksgiving. But if you do, this is the time to do it.
Well, let's just talk about it. So here's what we've got going on our website and in our store. And if you see us at a Hamfest, on any purchase made on our website or in our store at a Hamfest, whatever, from November 2nd to December the 8th. Now, our website is maintradingcompany.com or mtcradio.com. You go there and check it out. It's right there on the front right now. Any purchase made from November the 2nd through December the 8th, whatever you buy, if you buy a $20 Bofang or a $10,000 ICOM high-end transceiver, it doesn't matter. If it snows, it's free at MTC. If it snows in Paris, Texas, at our store on Christmas Day, 1 inch or more, we're going to refund you 100%. Every nickel of it, we're going to refund everything. So
then
there you go.
If it snows the next day, we're going to be hearing the main trading company is going out of business.
maybe, you know. Hey, there's no way. I mean, honestly, there's no way I could afford all this. There's insurance companies or whatever that back us, but it's a cool deal. There's insurance for everything. But the deal is, if it snows, it's free at MTC. If it snows an inch or more, look at our website. If it snows an inch or more on Christmas Day, anything you bought during that promotional period, it's free. ICOM has got a 7610 coming out that's going to be big money. This radio is going to set the world on fire. If you buy it right now, we're taking pre-orders. You're going to get it before Christmas. If it snows in Paris, Texas, we're going to refund you 100%. We're the first on lots of things, as far as trade-ins, financing, layaway. We do lots of stuff that no other online ham radio store does.
Well, you know, trade-ins, to me, trade-ins are are so important, because when I was a kid, there was a ham radio store in Detroit, and I don't remember what the name of the place was. There was only one. And I would go downtown, and I would look at all this used gear that these guys had brought in buying new radios. And that was my main source for buying a rig, you know. And I'd go in there, and I'd look around. And even those radios, at that time, I had to put them on layaway, you know, because I couldn't afford them. And they got a big bang out of that, you know. But I think that's so cool, because these radios have a lot of life left in them. And there's a lot of people that are just starting out, and they don't know what they want. You know, they just don't have a clue. And I especially, you know, real, real young people that are just starting out, they don't know what they want. So I think that's really admirable, because, you know, if you mark them up enough to where you can justify doing it, I applaud that. I think that's just absolutely admirable. It's really cool that we can go to the main trading company and click on the used gear slot, and we can see what's up there and what you got, and if it's if it's working or not or whatever, you know. So I mean, and there's a lot of guys like to buy broken radios to fix. That goes on at Hamfest all the time, you know. And some guy, you know, you've got your whatever it is, and you know, you're completely stumped by it, and you don't know why it doesn't work. And this guy comes along and says, "Oh, I know what's wrong with that." You know, I say, "Well, here, take it off my hands." You know, so well, we are about out of time. So why don't you kind of wind up and talk about anything that we've missed, anything that you can think of that we haven't covered that you wanted to talk about? Because I talked too much tonight. I did. I really did. I talked way too much tonight.
Okay, Ted. Well, I don't have a whole lot, other than we try to help the new hams, and try to help hams that can't afford or can't, you know, be able, for whatever reason, they can't get the gear that they want. We'll take trade-ins. We do layaways. There's no other store in the United States that's still doing layaways. We're the only one. We even finance radios for hams that can't pay for whatever reason. We have a program going. If you look on our website, our Help a Ham program, check that out. We helped last year several hams that were down on their luck, that got damaged by storms or whatever. We helped those guys get their stations back in order. And we ask, you know, our followers on social media and, you know, on our website to help us help them. So be sure and check that out. We do a lot of good for the community. So, you know, I'm a ham. There's a lot of others out there just like me. I mean, I'm a business owner, but really, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just like every other guy. I've got a radio and a mic, and I just love it. I love the ham radio business, and I love ham radio, and I hope it shows, and we want to give back if we can.
I want to do just one thing, though, before we run along. I've got Main Trading Company's website open, and I'm just going to go down this list so you folks understand what it is we're talking about. It says amateur ham radio. I don't know what that is, but it says new open box demo. And then there's connectors and adapters and educational toys. And there's FRS, GMRS, a tab there with station accessories. See here, stocking stuffers, package deals, something different. Okay, I don't know. Who knows what that is? It's probably, you know, some alien radios or something. commercial transceivers, airband radios, scanners, shortwave radios, RT system software programming package. There's a fantastic thing if you own an HT or something. Man, that'll get your HT programmed in just a matter of seconds. Power supplies. It says everything antennas, RF amplifiers, antenna tuners, CB radio and accessories, meters and test equipment, the brand name Roan, which we all know that is obviously a tower tab on here where you can click and see wires and cables or wiring cables, books and training materials, microphones, headphones, accessories, weather stations, crystal radio kits, pro audio, telegraph keys, HDTV antenna, and preamps. And then there's this thing that says bargain basement, and then used gear, boneyard as is junk, and emergency preparedness. Now, I want to just back up one thing. It says pro audio. So is this like studio equipment, or is this like high-end hi-fi?
It's studio equipment. You'll find some like the Howl PR40 stuff. You might see some Shure SM7Bs, stuff like that in there. You never know.
Okay, well, I didn't know that. Thought I would just ask, you know. But that's a lot. I mean, that really is. I mean, you really have full coverage there. I mean, full coverage. I can't think of anything that's not on your menu.
What's kind of funny is you only scratch the surface, because each of those is a subcategory of even more stuff.
I know. But the only thing I was trying to do is just let the folks that are listening that are not near a computer, let them kind of get the scope of this, you know, as to what we're talking about here. And I think it's, he's got a right on the front of the site, it says ICOM IC7610 coming real soon. You know, so that's something you may want to watch. But Main Trading Company. Now, give us the website again, because then we're out of time. We got to go. But give me the website one more time.
www.mtcradio.com. MainTradingCompany.com. Either one of those, that'll get you. And, man, we're on your side. And if you need us, call us, 903-737-0773. Tammy, Steve, Christine, my wife, or myself, one of us will answer the phone. We'll help you. Whatever you need.
Well, there you go. Hey, listen, this has been cool. Our guest, Richard Lenoir, KI5DX, the owner and proprietor of the Main Trading Company, and the originator of the Paris, Texas Hamfest, and a guy that just loves radio. Any other comment, David, that you've got before we run along here?
Like I said, I'm going to send you some links for things I want for Christmas.
Okay, all right, well, you do that, because I'm sure that he's going to have whatever you want. And then
I got one more thing. QSO, if you order tonight or tomorrow, use that as your coupon code at your checkout, QSO. You got a huge discount coming. Thanks, y'all, for having me.
All righty. Thank you. We appreciate it. And I want to say 73s to...